to return from executive session?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Regarding the approval of minutes, Gay, are you aware of any minutes that are available for us to approve? Excuse me?
17th.
Seventeenth.
The 17th. Are there any changes or objections to the minutes as currently presented? If not, by acclamation, they are approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Griffin?
Looks like two items. A thank you note from the Laurel Lions Club thanking council for a grant that they used to enhance their recreation center and repair the town clock. And also a fact sheet on the 2009 Delaware Bike Summit that begins on Friday, April the 24th. And there's information for anyone who would like to. You can register online for that event. So if anyone is interested, you could come forward and look at this after the session.
Do any council members have correspondence?
I do.
Ms. Deaver?
I have correspondence from Vicki Noor from the Milford Police Department, as well as Chief E. Keith Hudson, regarding the $25,000 grant from Sussex County. They're saying due to continued growth in Milford, the demand for additional police officers has grown, and this growth in the police force requires them to be equipped to handle situations presented to them for officer safety and also for the safety of all citizens. With this growth in the city and surrounding towns, there's been more demands from municipal agencies to respond out of town limits for other agency requests for assistance. They're saying technology is ever changing and it presents a financial burden, and it's required to successfully police today's society. Most of this technology is statute mandated, such as LiveScan 800, MGHTZ radios, and now there is discussion to change to a 700 megawatt, I believe that's MGHTZ is megawatt, I'm not schooled in that, radios, which will be mandated cost to each agency. Also, the police vehicles we use are equipped with mobile data terminals and in-car cameras that have to be updated frequently for the prosecution of arrest and protection of police officers. So, in generally, it's asking for an addition for a continued $25,000 grant as in the past.
Thank you. Are there any other correspondence? If not, I'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Baker, our county administrator.
Thank you. Good morning. The first item we have is some information to be provided by Mr. Jim Westall from Delaware Department of Transportation regarding the Delaware Bike Summit, and Mr. Westoff asked to appear before the county council. So.
Good morning, President and Commissioners. My name is Jim Westoff. I'm a public relations officer with the Delaware Department of Transportation. With me is Jennifer Baldwin, the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator for the Del Lot as well. Good morning. I'm here to talk today about, not about Del Lot necessarily, but about the Delaware Bike Summit. The Delaware Bike Summit is a one-day event we're holding in late April. We're bringing in speakers from all over the country to talk about bicycles and how they can fit into infrastructure and the transportation futures of our state. I'll boil it down to three questions. We'll be asking and hopefully answering these three questions. What can we do, we as a culture, as a society, what can we do to compel more people to ride bicycles? What changes we need to make to accommodate more bicycle traffic? And the third question is, well, why do we want bicycles in the first place? There's a lot of different answers to those questions, and I think if you think about it, we'll be able to come up with some ideas. Myself and other members of the Planning Committee are making presentations just like this to county councils and city councils throughout the state through the whole month of March. Last night I was at Rehoboth Beach. Chief Banks heard my presentation there. Last week Jennifer was in Lewis. And we're doing this every night. The reason is because we and the governor feels that alternative transportation is important to the future of Delaware. We can't just rely on cars for the future. It's not practical. It's not realistic. And we believe that if we're going to make a fundamental change to the transportation in Delaware, it can't just be DelDOT. We need to have everyone at the table. We can't have changes to the transportation begin and end at city limits or not have it, not have a statewide effort. Otherwise, it just won't work. It won't be effective. We see too many times now where there's a great bicycle facility just stops somewhere or only goes for a couple miles. Or a subdivision will have a bike path and it's not connected to anything. We see that far too often, and we know that it just doesn't work. And why Sussex County Council? Why did I bother Mr. Baker so much to be able to come today? Well, obviously you folks have a lot of bicycle issues. When I was a reporter at the Cape Gazette, I wrote articles about that Polish girl who was killed in front of McDonald's there on Route 1. We have Sussex County has issues concerning bicycles. And we want to make sure that you folks are at the table when we discuss these things. Because you can speak up and say, well, actually, that does not work for us. Or, yes, that's a good idea. Maybe that could work. Or these are some things that we're doing. So you folks, I think it's very important that you folks are at the table when we have this discussion. We want you folks to lead the municipalities, the various towns. And one of our breakout sessions is devoted to comprehensive plan and incorporating a bike plan into that comprehensive plan, making changes to the subdivision requirements, commercial zoning requirements, things like that. And these are things that are important for you folks to be a part of. The registration is free. You'll get two free meals, breakfast and lunch for free. And it's entirely paid for by corporate sponsors. Yes, with the help of Jennifer and the rest of her team, yesterday morning we got word that the entire thing is paid for by corporate sponsors. So we're real happy about that. No tax dollars being spent to put this on. And like I said, it's open to the public, so please grab one of these before you leave and register to attend. We definitely want the public to attend as well. And that's it. Do we have any questions for me?
Thank you. The next item we have on the agenda is the fiscal 2010 budget update, and I have a handout to give you a little background about our budget process. We have a county budget committee, which includes Ms. Kathy Roth, our budget director, Ms. Gina Jennings, director of accounting, Susie Webb, finance director, and myself. And we meet with county departments, or we met with county departments last week and reviewed their written budget request for the upcoming fiscal year 2010, which begins July 1st. These are informal meetings with each department head. Our committee listens to their request, asks questions, and discusses with them their proposals for the budget. Given the current economic situation, the requests, for the most part, were reasonable, with many below this year's budget. Our next step of our committee is to put together a budget recommendation for next year. Our plan is to formally introduce our budget to the County Council on May 19th, with a public hearing on either June 16th or June 23rd. We do have a number of concerns regarding our current budget forecast regarding our revenue. Our housing-related revenues have declined drastically. Our realty transfer tax collections next year, if our realty transfer tax collections next year are 80% of this year's predicted actual number, then we would collect only about $11.5 million. $11.5 million would be a 36% reduction versus the current year's budget, and it's about one third of what we collected in fiscal 2006. Some of the other numbers, as you can see, we are predicting, and these are rough numbers. This is not necessarily going to reflect what is presented to you in May, but it does show that if we go with the revenues and the current revenue structure, This is, without appropriated reserve, this is approximately where we would be at the present time. We are predicting a reduction in the state paramedic grant if they go to 30% of $1.3 million. Recorder deeds fees are down about 21%, $800,000. Building permit fees down about $500,000, 31% reduction. Investment income is down primarily due to very low interest rates. So without any changes in our fee schedules or other revenue, and without use of appropriated reserve, then our preliminary conservative estimate for revenues in the general fund is almost 22% below last year's, or about $12 million below this year's budget. So we will be recommending some revenue changes with the upcoming budget, including reimbursing from sewer and water districts for administrative costs that we incur in the general fund, reimbursing from sewer districts interest on realty transfer tax money that is used for interim financing for projects, for construction projects, and reimbursement from pension trust funds for pensioner costs. And we are also closely reviewing expenditures and making changes to department budgets, including, as we've talked about before, using staff from other offices to fill positions instead of hiring from the outside, cutting capital costs that can wait, cutting travel and training costs that is not essential, possibly discontinuing even some programs that are not as effective and beneficial as in the past, reducing grants, continuing to evaluate the use of county vehicles, phone, or use of cell phones, and making changes to our fleet policy, cutting overtime. This will be a difficult budget. We believe it is doable, and our goal was to provide a budget without hardship on our already stressed residents due to the current economy. We will bring forth to you a number of proposals over the next month or so, next few weeks, for your consideration, which would affect our proposed budget. So, in fact, we have one following to discuss on the next agenda item. So with that, I think you can see the last column on this handout shows preliminary fiscal 2010 budget for general fund revenue. Again, these are rough numbers. This is not what will be presented to you in May, but it's just to give you an idea of where we stand and how difficult a situation we're in.
Could David, could you give us early on, as you go into this process, a list of some of these capital projects that previous councils have approved? We've been putting money aside for various things, and we haven't started any of them yet, or maybe things have changed, like with the economy and the housing and stuff. We may look at it differently and put those on the table so that maybe we can give you all direction early on, as opposed to waiting till May 19th. And then we're scurrying around like they do up in Dover at the last minute, trying to put stuff together and things like that. So I would rather maybe have the council give you direction on some of the big, like an example I use is like the building of a new administrative building. I don't know if there's a consensus to do that, but you know, bring those types of projects, put them in front of us, and let us figure out if it's something we need to do now, or maybe we could mothball it or take, you know, withdraw some of the money out of those areas that we've got money sitting aside in some of these special accounts, I guess. Okay.
Yes.
But I'd like you to know that early on,
right,
the committee, so that, like I said, I don't want to wait to the last minute we try to start figuring out where we start making cuts or whatever.
Yeah, we can put together a list of capital projects and non-sewer and water projects,
right,
for the council review, and provide you some information about them, and then try to get some,
right,
feedback from the council as to what you feel are the higher priority. Sure.
Yeah,
it would be
what
helpful
are priorities
for us,
right? And
any other questions for
I
Mr.
have a
Baker?
Question on
Ms. Deaver.
Mr. Baker, on the reimbursements, could you kind of explain, just for take one of them and explain to me where it's coming from and where it's going? The cash flow that you're talking about, the reimbursement goes from where to where?
Which does not show up on this as a, but it is something that we are looking at. To give you an example, the personnel department is a county department that handles personnel for all the county, 500 plus employees. Roughly 100 of those employees are dedicated to sewer and water.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those costs are attributable, some of those personnel department mm-hmm. costs are attributable to the sewer and water district. So what we would do is come up with a formula to reimburse the general fund for part of the personnel department costs. And that's the type of thing.
That's
only we have to be able to justify it. I mean, it's not like we can, you know, we have to be able to justify any costs that we charge to the sewer districts.
I understand. At what point does the public become involved in getting a detailed look at the budget, proposed budget?
Well, on May 19th, we would present the budget, and that is our goal. We have a meeting. We'll do a PowerPoint and whatnot and explain what is included in the budget. We have a public hearing, which would... We haven't technically set the date. We're looking at June 16th or June 23rd. We actually have three public hearings. And
okay.
One is on the non-sewer and water budget. One is on the sewer and water rates, and then the other is on the assessment rolls.
Okay.
So after the public hearings are done and complete, then the council could take action after those hearings are closed.
Okay, good.
Any other questions?
I sat in on one of those sessions with your departments, and I have to say I really admire the team. I think they're doing a great job, and they're just cutting, and that's what we have to do. I congratulate you.
Yeah, thank you to the other council members who sat in on some of those meetings and lended your support. If there's no other questions, Mr. Baker, you can continue.
Okay. The next item is group hospital plan review. And I have a handout here also, several handouts. With us today, we have Mr. Dave Smith and Mr. Chris Smith from Integra, and also Mr. Dennis Cordry, our county personnel director. And again, our budget committee, including Kathy Roth, Gina Jennings, Susan Webb, plus Dennis Cordry and myself, have been working on possible revisions to our group hospital plan with Mr. Smith from Integra and also with Mr. Steve Fallon, who was our group hospital consultant with Insurance Buyers Council. Our current plan is up for renewal on May 1st, which is the annual renewal date. Next week, a decision will need to be made regarding our plan renewal. We do not have all the information today regarding the details of the proposals from some of the carriers, but we will have that, and we will present that to you as soon as we have it for your perusal. But we do have information for your consideration today regarding possible changes to our plan. And just for information, give you a little background about our plan, we currently have what is called a self-funded plan, whereby we pay an insurance company to cover the cost of catastrophic losses in the plan. Those are losses over $250,000 per person per year. So someone with a very serious illness, if they incur more than $250,000 worth of medical bills, then the insurance company would kick in and pay those claims. We also pay an administrator, Integra, from Seaford, to process the claims for us. most of the funds from our group hospital rates are deposited into a county account managed by the county to be used to pay medical claims each week. Integra applies various discounts to each bill that is received, and then they pay the bill, and we reimburse weekly for the bills that are paid. A year ago, various recommendations to change our plan were made by our group hospital consultant, Insurance Buyer Council, And some of those recommendations are included here, and these recommendations on this handout have been submitted to our insurance consultant, Steve Fallon, and he concurs with them. I do want to make note that the savings estimates noted here are estimates. They are subject to many variables, such as the number of employees who may opt out of coverage, our enrollment mix between the types of coverages, family, and so on. Our medical experience, of course, is a major factor, the type and variety of medical claims that we have, and then inflation in medical costs, which is consistently at least double the amount of inflation for other items, and that's a national problem. But we would like, on the first handout, we'd like to go over some of the proposed possible changes. And again, our goal is to reduce group hospital plan costs by revising the county plan to make it more in line with the state of Delaware group hospital plan that they provide for their employees without creating undue burden on our employees. And so that's the way we've approached this. And I'll just go through some of these items line by line. First, we are recommend an increase in copays. These are the cost paid per visit when you go to the doctor or whatever hospital, and to make them very similar to the state's top plan. For instance, office visits, if it's an in-network doctor, we go from $20 to $25, out-of-network, $35 to $40. Inpatient hospital, we currently have a copay of $50 per day, maximum of 3 days for in-network, and we are proposing to raise that to $100 per day, maximum of 5 days for in-the-network, and $150 per day with maximum of 5 days for out-of-the-network. And that those increases in copays plus some others, and I'm not going to explain every one of them, but they are on the second handout for you. The estimated annual savings is $347,000. The second item is increase in prescription card copays, which we have over time increased to be more in line with the state. Generic drugs would go from $7 to $10, formulary from $15 to $25, and brand name drugs from $20 to $35 per prescription. Again, a savings of $153,000. The third item, the county would establish a spousal coordination of benefits policy similar to the policy that the state has for its employees. So spouses covered by the county must also be covered by their employer first, assuming their employer has group hospital insurance. So, for instance, my wife works for the state, so she would be covered with a state plan first. If I wanted my wife to be covered under the county, I could pay extra to have that done, but the state plan would pay her medical cost first, and then if there was anything the state plan didn't cover that our plan covers, then the county plan would cover that difference. So there would be some substantial savings there. And that we are estimating $56,000 during the first year because it takes time to implement, but after the first year, roughly $225,000 per year. We're also recommending that we establish a spousal coordination of benefits for prescription cards also, so assuming the spousal employer provides prescription card. They'd have to go to use theirs first, and then if they paid extra to the county for coverage through the county's prescription card, then the counties would kick in, assuming our benefit, if our benefit was better than their own. Fourth item, increased cost to individual employees for health insurance from $0 per month to $40 per month, which works out to less than $10 per week. This is a change. This would be for our top-of-the-line best program. The state now charges $48.60 per month for their top plan for employee coverage. So ours would be still below that. And also, there are we've heard reports that the state will be increasing their employee share of cost, but we haven't seen anything definite on that yet. Again, we currently, the county does not currently charge. We provide our health care to the employee free of charge currently. So this would be we do charge for family coverage or subscriber and child coverage. We do charge our employees for that. But this would be basically for individual health insurance or Medicare insurance. We are suggesting that we begin the process of charging employees $40 per month. And then the fifth item is to establish another health insurance option. This is basic, what we would call silver plan, similar to the state's basic plan. We would give employees an option. There would be no cost to the employees for employee coverage with the basic plan. It is a good plan. We would charge for family and subscriber and child coverage, but at 50% or whatever the withholding is for our best plan. This proposed plan is not an HMO, so it is a good, I feel it is a good plan. It does allow the use of out-of-network doctors and medical providers, but at a greater cost to the employee. But there are limits on the cost to the employee. So the maximum cost per year for out-of-network would be $8,000 for a family, or $4,000 for a family for within-network. So they would have an option. Integra estimates, based on their experience with other employers, maybe 10 to 20% of our employees may elect this type of coverage versus our current plan with certain revisions to it. And then number six, prescription card change. Currently, individual prescriptions are allowed for, I believe, up to 90 days. And what we are proposing is that individual prescriptions would be allowed for a maximum of 30 days unless they go through the mail order process. If they go through mail order, they can get prescriptions for 90 days. The mail order process is less expensive. Drugs are less expensive, typically, through the mail order process. And we'd also pick up some additional copay money. So the savings would be $66,000, or is estimated to be $66,000 per year. And then finally, number seven, an opt-out benefit, where we've talked about and the council endorse opt-out for health insurance. And what we are suggesting is that we provide an incentive to opt-out. And we would offer either 5 days of paid vacation per year or $75 per month as an opt-out benefit to employees to opt out of county coverage. But we would ensure that they have some sort of health coverage from another provider. I think that's the normal practice, so that they don't, you know, that it, I think it helps us from a liability standpoint. So the total estimated savings, again, of all of these changes is $1,185,000. Again, we developed these estimates with information from Integra and Mr. Fallon. Mr. Smith indicated to me yesterday that three insurance carriers that are pricing our coverage came up with similar savings amounts for these particular changes. So I think they are in the ballpark, but again, they are estimates that will change based on our experience and medical experience. So if you look at the second handout, it shows a sheet that is our plan of benefits today. This is shows the various copays and whatnot for all the different services. The second sheet is for the Medicare plan. And then the third sheet is what we call the gold plan of benefits. which if the council recommend or approve these changes, this would be our better plan. And as you can see, some of the changes on the hospital copays and whatnot are included. Basically, it is still a top-of-the-line plan. It is comparable, not exactly the same as the state's top plan, but we tried to line it up in a comparable fashion with the state's top plan. And then the silver plan, again, it has co-insurance and deductibles. It's structured a little bit differently. It would not cost an individual employee. We would not charge an individual employee for this plan. But there are maximum on deductibles and out-of-pocket costs. So I guess our question for the county council is whether or not you would concur with these proposed changes. And we, if you concur, then we would continue to pursue our insurance quotes with these assumptions. And we are hoping to have, we will have the insurance quotes ready for your review next Tuesday. With that, I'll...
Are there any questions for Mr. Baker?
One question, David. Just to refresh my memory, I'm trying to put this in perspective. For a person to be to become, I'm trying to have to see how I word this. The last page about the retirees. Okay, how many years does it take now as a county employee to be able to receive that last page?
Well, these are Medicare benefits, so I think you have to be 65.
Okay, 65, but
even go with this coverage. This would be coverage. Normally, this coverage covers a pensioner over and above regular Medicare coverage. So the bulk of the costs are paid.
How long does an employee have to work to receive these benefits?
It depends on their age. Yeah, you have to. We have formulas of eligibility for group hospital. The mm-hmm. longer your service is, I think it's 25 years, you would get full coverage comparable to what the county pays for employees. If you work like 8 years and you leave county service and then don't draw a pension until you're, say, 62 or whatever, then you would be eligible for this, but you would have to pay for it. So, I mean, there's a number of different. I don't have all that in front of
okay.
me.
Okay, is
you get half after 15.
Yeah, 15 is
after
half.
15.
Yeah. Or those employees hired after July 1st.
Right, it's complicated.
Right.
Okay, but we're not looking at any of those areas to change anything.
Not with this. This is basically the plan itself, right?
Are there any other questions? Do you have a motion today, Mr. Baker?
Yes. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approves the proposed changes to our group hospital plan for the upcoming year.
Do I have a motion from council?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you. Okay, then, the next item is legislative update. We have several items for your consideration. The first pertains to a proposal that's been discussed a number of times regarding adding two additional county council persons. The county finance department has reviewed this option and has estimated the additional cost of this proposal. And they've estimated, as per the handout, for the first year, an additional cost of approximately $248,000. This reflects $50,000 to make changes to our building to provide several small offices for two additional council persons and make whatever changes needed in this room. plus the additional an additional $198,000 per year, which would be ongoing cost. $104,000 of that is for salary and benefits, which would be group hospital pension costs, salary costs for two additional council persons at the current rate, plus an additional $34,000 is estimated for other costs, such as utilities, supplies, insurance, travel, phone costs, et cetera. So what basically on an ongoing basis, we expect a cost of roughly about $198,000 per year, plus or minus, and then roughly $50,000 initially for retrofitting several offices or adding several offices for two new council people. So we are asking your opinion regarding this proposal so that Mr. Godwin and myself know whether or not to take a position on this with the General Assembly.
Does the council have any thoughts on this issue?
Well, I think,
Mr. Cole?
Yeah, well, I'll just say, I mean, the last council, we did take a position. We understood it was going to cost, you know, additional funds. Actually, you'd be pretty naive if you didn't think it would. But I think the benefits of with this large county with a growing population, and the problem that I see that I'd like to see too at large, because I think that when people come in here and have either support something or oppose something, they've only got one really council person up here that they can influence, say, with voting or whatever, because if they had two at large, those people would have to run through this, you know, run for an election with a vision for this entire county. They would have to respond to all constituents throughout the county, and they would look at things differently, where council people, typically, when we get in here, we start worrying about our own little districts. We forget about what benefits the county as a whole, and so I just think the benefits of having a little bit larger council with it'll have a better debate, better I think it'll be better government for Sussex County at this stage in our development. And we've taken a position, and now if, you know, I just think that we were aware that it would cost money, and I'd be a little concerned if we all start saying, oh, we can't do it now because of cost. Well, we'll probably spend $200,000+ on a lawsuit, you know, with the state of Delaware, and that right there would have paid for that, so. You got to, I guess, pick your priorities. I think having two additional council people would be a priority in my mind.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Ms. Deaver, did you have any thoughts?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I know that I consider the entire county when I look at legislation, I look at all the issues that come before us. And as far as I'm concerned, we all represent the entire county. And I think if people want better representation, you should take a look at getting us some staff, so that we could address our constituents a little better than we can right now, because it's, for me, it's almost, it is a full-time job. And I think five people can take care of it quite well.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent. Have you any thoughts?
Yes, I am not in favor of increasing council size. I appreciate Councilman Cole's comments about the cost and understanding to do that, but I think especially today when we're worrying about an $11 million shortfall and changing our employees' health benefits to cost them money, and looking at everything we deal with as to cutting back funding to people, I'm hard-pressed to justify spending $200,000 on something I don't think is needed. And I think that the people are elected by district. We elect our representatives by district, our senators by district, and you answer those people. We do have the entire county to manage and look over. I think we try to do that. But I certainly am opposed to increasing council members.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson?
I'm also opposed to having more council. I've said that all along. I said that when they came up 10 years ago, 5 years ago. For one reason, we have four senators that represent this county. We have five councilmen. We have 20% more. They do a pretty well job at it. Another thing that Mr. Cole did refer to, that somebody from maybe up in Greenwood could represent somebody down, would have to answer to people in Bethany. If that be the case, if we took that thoughts, then we'd probably say, well, we should have some representatives, state representatives, running at large, or we should have some state senators running at large, because maybe our representatives down here in Sussex County doesn't represent those in Wilmington. So I feel that people are better represented when you pick out certain areas and say, you represent me in this area. And I think it's far more better to keep it that way than it is to go countywide or statewide. And you lose contact. You don't really have to answer to people as well as much as you would when you have to answer personally within a district. So I vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. I have in the past supported two at-large council members so that we could have a countywide debate each election to give a sense of where the county as a whole is on many of these critical issues. I think that these very difficult economic times and the real numbers that have been presented today force me to now withdraw my support for that. I do believe another option could be to allow the county council president to be voted on by the people of the county, countywide, to allow for that debate to occur as opposed to electing the president internally as we do now. It may not be practical from a mechanical standpoint. It's something that folks could look at. But with respect to expanding the council at this time, I think it would be a mistake.
Let me just elaborate. There was a county I was familiar with at one time. They had five councilmen. It was a similar county like we have. They had an agricultural area interior, and they had coastal resorts. And they had five council members ran at districts. And what they did is they changed it that made the candidates had to come out of districts, but once they became the candidates, they ran countywide. And that way, it wouldn't have to increase the council, but it would give, again, the people of this county a voice into all these decisions. And right now, it's easy to get three people to do one thing. And for years, I've seen it happen here. We're at the coastal area. When at one time, my district went from Fenwick Island to almost to Lewis, back to Rabbits Ferry and Harbison and everything else. A lot of poor decisions were made because those people couldn't vote for them. And they council people were protected by this district type of system. So maybe, gentlemen, if you think about better government and maybe more open government, maybe a simple change is, as a candidate, you would come out of a district so that everybody's spread out, so you're not all coming from one area, but then you'd have to run countywide. And then you would, again, you could run with a vision for this county. Right now, there's nobody running with a vision for this county, and I think that's part of our problem. I still think, even though the market has slowed down and we're not having the pressure from the development, there's a lot of people out there that have the impression that the county government hasn't been addressing some of the issues. We've been basically a knee-jerk reaction to what's happening as opposed to being ahead of the curve. We're always trying to catch up with a lot of these issues, and it takes years and things. So I think maybe even a subtle change like that. So I don't know how you might want to stick that, you know, in your hat and think about that. But it would bring, I think, a better representative type of government to Sussex County.
The alternative proposals may be appropriate for another discussion on a different day. For today, though, I would ask that a motion be made to make clear that the county administrator may communicate to the General Assembly our opinion on this issue.
I make a motion we vote no.
I have a motion that we oppose the expansion of council with two at-large council members. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion before we take the vote? If not, Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
No.
I vote yes.
If there aren't any objections, we will send a letter explaining the council's position to the General Assembly and the governor.
Thank you.
As far as the realty transfer tax legislation, we are continuing to watch closely for any proposals that change the formula. So we will let you know. I'm not aware of any new developments as far as that goes at this point in time.
I'm sorry, real estate transfer tax?
Yeah.
And paramedics, I guess?
And paramedics funding, too, right.
Thank you.
In fact, this morning I was made aware of a bill, and just I'll pass this out regarding windmills. And This was a proposal to basically eliminate some restrictive covenants. It says any land, local or county government or homeowners association covenant or restriction which prohibits or restricts the owner of a property from using a system of obtaining wind energy for a residential single-family dwelling unit is void and unenforceable if the installation location has a parcel minimum size of 1 acre. Right now, and I went over this with Mr. Lank earlier today, if a property is less than 5 acres and the property owner would like to construct a windmill, then our code requires that the property owner must apply to the Board of Adjustment for variance. If the property is greater than 5 acres, then we don't require that. So, I mean, this bill would basically take us out of the loop unless it's 1 acre, unless the property owner is 1 acre or more instead of 5 acres. So this is for your information. I don't know if you want to take a position on it or not.
Well, the manufacturers of these things recommend, typically, if you read the literature, an acre. And we've had our board approve them on quarter-acre lots in subdivisions and with the tall poles and everything. And so we need that's too small and too intrusive because they do generate a certain amount of noise. And so our board has been approving something. Now, we could direct the board that we would want to see a minimum of an acre or at least, something around near that. But what we're doing right now is we're allowing the Board of Adjustment to do a disservice to neighboring property owners because it feels good now to be supportive of wind turbines and all this other stuff because it's popular. And I feel sorry for the people that have to live next to one. And there was a lady actually in my neighborhood who's got one now as close as you are to me out her bedroom window has been approved by the Board of Adjustment on a quarter-acre lot or less than a half acre. I don't know what it's somewhere between a quarter acre and a half acre, but houses are very close. When we only have a 10-foot setback on each property, so you got almost 20 feet between the houses, and there sits one of these wind things going by everything. So we've either got to, if this doesn't get approved, we need to direct our board to at least have a minimum because they're just approving all kinds of things right now, and that worries them.
Ms. Deaver?
So I'd support this. I don't have any problem with this.
Yeah, I don't either. I might add that in Sierra Village the other day, I noticed one of the people living there has a solar panel, which is almost half the size of the mobile home they live in. It's installed right next to their home. And I'm wondering what the setback was for that. So I think we need to take a look at some of these setbacks and instruct our board to maybe take a good look at that, too.
Yeah, well, one time, Dave, didn't we address the when satellite dishes were huge? Remember the real big ones that first came out? Didn't we address those with they weren't allowed to be put in certain areas or something? Because some people were putting them in front of the houses.
I don't think I have Lawrence. Lawrence isn't here right now, but
didn't
I
we
in the back?
Yeah, he's
back.
He's trying.
Lawrence,
come forward. While he's coming up, can I ask Mr. Baker for clarification? Would this prevent a homeowners association from restricting windmills? In other words, a homeowner association.
No,
can you answer that question?
I think it does. The way maybe Mr. Griffin can answer that, but the way it says any local government or homeowners association covenant or restriction which prohibits or
bans the use of government.
I talked to the dog electric man this week about these windmills. And the rooftop mounted systems, they had one on their roof over there. It vibrated so much they had to take it off and put it on the pole by itself.
I know.
But this bill would limit the ability of homeowners association to restrict them. I know there's some double negatives in there. So in other words, if you had a development, Sam Wilson's development, you could not put a restriction in your deed that says no windmills on, you know, less than 5 acres or something. In other words, it takes the power out of the hands of the homeowners association to limit the use of windmills. Is that correct, Mr. Griffin?
Well, what it appears to say is that you got to have a minimum parcel size of 1 acre, and then says local or county governments or homeowners associations. It seems to lump them all together. May opt to place further restrictions on wind energy systems. However, they must meet the following minimum requirements. So they seem to be saying that you can't do away with those minimum requirements. In other words, there's a 1.5 times the height of the windmill setback. The noise can't exceed 5 decibels. Must refrain from using the windmill for advertising signs, flags, streamers. So electric wiring must be placed underground. It says that you could create other, at the county or the local or the homeowner association level, you could create additional restrictions, but you can't take away these.
So they could ban windmills from the development?
No. I don't get that. No.
Okay, so this eliminates the ability of the homeowners association to ban windmills.
Well, it seems to say if you've got a parcel that's 1 acre in size, that you can further restrict beyond these minimum requirements. It seems, and I don't know how the public has responded to this. It says synopsis says the bill bans the use of covenants or restrictions to prohibit the installation of wind systems. So that seems to be the thrust, that we are going to have windmills. The state's going to set the minimum requirements. If you want to come up with some requirements beyond that, you can. Now, I don't know whether there's going to be an outcry from homeowners association saying we should have the right to decide whether or not to have windmills, but somebody has decided at the state level that energy policy should promote the ability of a homeowner to install a windmill.
Keep in mind, what we typically see here are not subdivisions, unless they're out in the ag district, but in these planned communities in the development district are typically laid out planned communities that have, with our cluster housing and everything else, we permit smaller lots. So they're not going to, those developments won't fall in the category because they don't have the minimum 1 acre size.
And I doubt that there's any subdivisions out there now that prohibit windmills. So going forward, even if you could prohibit them, it's only going to be on new developments.
Jim, I think it was similar to what they're doing is where some subdivisions said you couldn't have flags. And some guy put out an American flag and got in trouble with his homeowner association. Now they've passed laws that says, you know, you can't restrict those kind of flags. But anyway, I guess windmills have fallen into that category, that it's something good and positive. So got to have 1 acre, though, to do it.
Sort of like fight years ago on satellite dishes.
Satellite dishes is what I brought. Yeah, those big things, right? So anyway.
Would you have, Mr. Lyons?
Yeah, I was just going to say, did we have something
No. That
addressed those big satellite dishes?
No.
We didn't, okay, but the homeowners association.
Never require a setback.
That's all. So they could put them in the front, because I've seen them in front yards and different things. I thought we did address that. I know homeowners associations typically did.
Typically, right.
Mr. Wilson.
Okay, thanks. That's all.
Let's look at number 9 there.
Number 9 on where?
On the front side here.
Oh, line number 9.
Yeah, line number 9. It says wind turbines must be set back 1.5 times the height, turbine's height. Then it goes on and says, if you put these on a house, the house is 40 feet high, and you go up 10 foot with a tower, or 20 feet, or 30, whatever you get off the blades, does that house count part as a tower? So you can go back that 1.5 times?
It sounds like we can't address it. It can exceed our height limits.
It says 1.5 times a tower, but would that be considered part of the tower, the house that's sitting on?
Well, this doesn't seem to address the issue of whether you could put them on your house as opposed to putting them on a tower.
Well, it does say in line 5, roof-mounted wind systems that integrate into an existing or new home or structure shall have no minimum partial size.
That's what I got.
Oh, okay, there you go.
That's the way I read it, too. Okay,
I didn't even see that line.
Well,
how do we, where's Lawrence again? There he is. Lawrence, if we have a house that's built to the maximum, you know, height, which is what, 42 feet here?
42.
42 feet. Now, somebody who's got an, I got a house, I got a 42 feet. Can I come along and put a roof turbine or a roof system, mounted system?
If the council addresses it, it would have to be part of the ordinance. Right now, they have to go to the board.
Would have to go to the board. Okay.
Because of the height.
Right now, the problem that is because of the height.
Okay.
The problem that we've had in both cases, the windmill and a pole, we've had one collapse.
Oh, good.
Because it wasn't built to the specification required by the manufacturer.
But we don't have any inspection of it. So
we had also had a problem with one on a house and it had to be removed, as one of you all said, that vibrations, et cetera, created a problem.
So have you had any?
We had it both ways.
Have you had any apply that were to be connected to the house, or
yes,
have they all been tower mounted?
No, we've had both. Mm-hmm. Probably, I'd say 50-50 without looking at the numbers. We haven't had that many windmills applied for. We had a run on them for about 4, 5, 6 months where we had several at the Board of Adjustment meetings, but it slowed up quite a bit.
So right now we don't, anything to do with a wind turbine goes to Board of Adjustments?
Unless it's
less
over
five acres.
It's over 5 acres, yeah. But anything less than
five acres has to go to the board, right.
Which it sounds as if this law would conflict with our code.
Well, sure it does.
Better go take them to court.
Right.
Better take them to court. There.
Sounds that way.
Sam, let's go to court.
Well, let's talk serious about this for a minute.
The one thing as opposed to a regulatory agency is the difference there, Mr.
One
Cole.
One thing specific about the ordinance is that it's giving you a height, and it gives you a criteria where it setback has to be 1.5 times. So, for example, if you were a tower with 150 feet tall, including a blade, you'd be 225 feet from a property line.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to apply for a variance.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still going to see them at the board.
Mr. Vincent?
That means it probably have to be 4 and 5 feet wide in order to,
right,
to
or
put
more
in or loan. So, and that's got to be right.
And they end up applying for a variance.
That's got to be right smack in the middle.
Well, the key to this conversation is, guys, that all they do at the Board of Adjustment is they say, okay, build it to this manufacturer's specifications, and out the door they go.
Yeah,
there's no inspection, right?
And we've had some over on houses that they asked that it be engineer certified that it would work on that.
But there's no requirement. So some might get in and get,
some
like
might,
the guy who's collapsed.
Not necessarily consistent in every
right
case.
I'd rather see something consistent.
Have you had any home-built systems apply?
I don't think
there
so
are no manufacturers.
I don't think so.
No. Okay.
After talking to Delaware Electric this week, it costs about 5 times more to build this windmill and get your electric than it would if you bought it from them. So at least. So at this point, I don't really know why I buy one windmill in him unless you got one of just one. See the windmill turn.
Well, there's people out there that like windmills.
We had one
that was on a commercial building, and the purpose of that was it was an environmental company that was trying to show all the examples of the things that they can do, and so they built one on their building, was approved by the board.
Well, why don't we
had some on residences, like in Mr. Cole's area, we had two on the same property.
Yeah.
And one of them collapsed.
Did it really already, in my neighborhood. when are you retiring? You're retiring soon?
Thanks.
Yes, Mr. Vincent.
It would seem. I mean, I don't have an issue. I don't think I have an issue with the 1 acre lot size, but it does concern me about the roof mounted that there is no minimum parcel size. You could get a variance for anything on a house. I mean, in the Councilman Cole's district, that some of his houses are rather close together.
My neighborhood.
It would appear to me that I'm not sure I'm real comfortable with just going through the Board of Adjustments. Maybe I think it's something that the council staff should look at and come up with some ideas on these things as far as making sure they are certified, somebody inspects them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mike, why don't we oppose this? Why don't we write a letter and oppose this, David? And because there's a couple issues that the Acre Homeowners Association, maybe they should have some say in all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple issues I think that we're all sharing here that we have some concerns that we don't like it as written.
I'll accept that as a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to oppose this legislation as it's currently written, with the understanding that staff will work on trying to address the concerns of council. Is there any further discussion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I vote yes.
we're going to have to go to court again.
Thank you, and I think Mr. Godwin also has one or two items to mention quickly on legislative update.
Mr. President, members of council, there are two other bills. There's two other bills that have been introduced I thought I would bring to your attention. The first is House Bill 26. This bill was introduced the first weeks that the legislature was in business, and this one essentially gives you more authority in the area of collecting liens. It says that, I'll read you the synopsis. This act authorizes any county or municipality to treat unpaid liens as a tax lien against the property, subject to the lien, and to collect such liens in the same manner as other tax liens, including pursuant, so on and so on. The point is that if we have a lien for a sewer bill or a lien for anything that's owed us on a property, we can execute that lien as if it were a tax lien, which means you can take it to sheriff's sale. So you can actually collect your lien monies faster. And this, if this is enacted, it'll affect all three counties and all towns. That's one bill. Another bill that I wanted to bring to your attention, this bill has been before the legislature before. This is Senate Bill number 7, introduced by one of our favorite senators, Venables from Laurel. And this is the eminent domain bill. It's back again.
Beth Venables?
Excuse me?
Beth Venables? Bob Venables.
So that's what I said.
I'm sorry.
I said
he's got a daughter named Beth.
Right. This bill has been introduced and passed through both houses before, but it was unable to get signature from the governor last year. This would restrict the use of eminent domain, which is something that I thought you were probably in favor of last year, because it does not allow anyone who has the authority to acquiesce property through eminent domain for purposes anything other than public use. There was some controversy upstate in the last few years about one of the municipalities taking property for economic development purposes, and that caused this bill to be generated. So the bill is back. It would restrict, it says in the bill, it says that the policy of this provision of this chapter pertaining to eminent domain is to ensure that eminent domain is used for a limited defined to public use. Public use does not include the generation of public revenues, increase in tax-based revenues, employment, or economic health through private land owners or economic development. So they're trying to clarify what eminent domain is and is not. Those are the two bills that I'm aware of. There's another bill that's been pre-filed by Representative Cathcart that has not yet been introduced on the House floor, therefore does not have a number, but that bill would change the apportionment of realty transfer taxes from the current sharing of 1.5% for the state and the local jurisdiction into a 2% for the state and 1% for local jurisdiction. But that bill has not yet been introduced. I just checked on the legislative computer on their website this morning, and it still hasn't been introduced yet, but it is pre-filed.
Mr. Godwin, if there's no objection from council, could I ask you to go ahead and include in our packets each week these bills with a summary report?
Yes, well, the legislature, yes, sir. The legislature goes back in session today, and I'll be monitoring them on a weekly basis from now forward, and I will report to you everything that I see and try to keep you abreast of all the legislation.
And if you could include the legislation in our packets, we may be able to better discuss it.
Sure.
Council. Thank you.
No problem. Yes, sir.
Mr. Wilson?
How do we let him know about the domain, our position?
Yeah, the eminent domain bill needs to be included in this week if you have a chance to get it to us, and we may want to discuss it in the near future. If you see anything coming down the fast track, you know, red flag it so that we can take a position immediately. I'm assuming, for instance, they're not going to try to pass the windmill this week, but that is one reason why we tried to put our opinion on the record.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Could you include me in that distribution?
Yes, sir. We'll do it.
Anything else, Mr. Baker?
No. I have the county administrator's report.
Okay.
We have several items. First, a report from the Delaware Solid Waste